Hello, welcome along to the 13th episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Thanks for joining us again. There's only a couple of days till the athletics starts at the Rio Olympics. Damn, I'm excited at the moment. If you haven't listened to our Olympic betting slip special from last week, I do urge you to do so, if only to laugh at me when everything goes wrong with my predictions. I'm basically just hanging my hat on a Ken Boy triumph right now. This week I'm talking to another steeplechaser. It's the new British 1500 metre steeplechase record holder and fastest bus driver in London, Jermaine Mayes. Jermaine has always been really talented, but last year he took the brave decision to really go for it. So he left his home in southeast London and relocated to Ethiopia, where he started training with a group of top elite level athletes. Now the interview is a really fascinating insight into life in Africa, how people train, how they live, how they eat. So hopefully it should be really interesting. And we also talk about running to skip school, how a £3 loan from a coach led to Jermaine taking up the steeplechase in the first place, and how a race with Mo Farah back in the under 20s nearly led to Mo Farah drowning in the steeplechase pit. Sounds exciting. Here we go. So Jermaine, you are the new British record holder at the 1500 metre steeplechase. There's not many people that can say that. Pretty special moment, eh?
It feels very good. I'm very, very happy. And I'm obviously pleased that my name's in the history books.
So, yeah. Did you earmark that race at the beginning of the season to get a British record, or was it just came about?
It came up on the radar last year because Bash Minder, he's a steeplechase national coach. He was trying to promote steeplechase, and he was trying to get 1500 metre runners to convert to steeplechase. So his idea was up to 15 steeplechase, because it's the same distance but just over hurdles.
Okay.
So what he did at the end of the season, he did a 15 steeplechase, and then he invited steeplechase. I went there, he said what the British record was, and then I attempted it and didn't get it. But so this year, I said to him, oh, it'd be good if we could have another 15 chase. And obviously he still wanted to put it on because they still want to develop the steeplechase. BMC put the 1500 and I saw it and I was thinking, yeah, I'll do that.
And you beat it by miles, didn't you?
Miles. I bought you by like three seconds.
That's miles in athletics, surely.
In 100 metres, that's miles, yeah. But yeah, that record dates back to 1969.
Oh, nice. That's a hell of a record.
Obviously, it's an unusual event, so it didn't get run that often, but it's still a really old record.
When did you realise you had a talent for jumping over stuff?
It goes back from, I think it was like the Herne-Hill Open in Tuttenbeck. I turned up, I must have been 15. I turned up to do the 1500 and it was like £3 to do it. I only had £3 with me, so I did 1500. And then one of the assistant coaches from our club says, oh, does anyone else want to do any more events? And I was like, oh, I've got no more money. He says, oh, I'll give you £3 if you just do another event. And I said, what is there? He said, 1500 steeplechase. I was like, all right, it'd be the same. And I did it, and I was okay.
Yeah.
And then when I looked up my time, I looked at the English schools qualifying, because I've never qualified for English schools before. I was only 10 seconds away. So the year after, I was like, okay, I'm going to do steeplechase because I want to qualify for the English schools steeplechase. So yeah, literally, because someone said, oh, do I want to do another thing? I was like, oh yeah, all right, but you're paying my £3. Is that fine?
And then what happened the next year?
I did the schools and won it, and then got picked for England and then won it.
What age were you then?
So I was 16. So when I did the English schools at 16, I ran 4:18, and it was a championship record at the time, but it isn't no more. And then I got picked for England. Like Ricky Seuss came second in English schools, and he went to Athens Olympics in the 800 metres. So it was quite a good standard. Like Stephen Murphy was third.
The last time I saw Stephen Murphy was in a kebab shop in Kentish Town.
What, serving it? Because he totally looked like it, or was he rolling around on the spit? Chili sauce, boss? Chili sauce?
And when did you first get into running?
I first got into running when I was in secondary school. They announced on the tannoy, if anyone wants to do school cross country, you can miss half day at school. So basically to skip class, you did cross country. So all the bad kids skip class. I wasn't one of the bad kids, but I just wanted to skip class without getting in trouble. Yeah, and we get to the cross country, and it's like it's cold, it's wet, it's raining, and then you start getting competitive. So that's where it started for me, really.
And do you still do cross country now?
I try to avoid it when I can, but I get forced to do it. So yeah, I still do.
You say that though, but you were fourth, weren't you, at the Intercounties one year?
You know why? Because it was
Why?
bone dry. It's like a bowls green the whole way around. It's perfect.
That on any ordinary year, that would have been good enough to get you to sort of qualify you for the world cross country, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so it's usually top six go, but they changed it. But yeah, so I would have made World Cross.
And do you have plans to do it next year, do you think, the cross country?
Yeah, I'll probably do cross countries through the winter, but that won't be my aim. But I'll just do it just to sort of do a blowout for a race.
Yeah. Well, you've got quite an interesting story in that you're currently working as a bus driver. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm a bus driver. Yeah, at New Cross Bus Garage.
Oh, cool.
They gave me 1 year sabbatical to train for the games.
Mean, it's quite brave of you to leave your full-time job and to go for it. What made you do that?
Originally, I started thinking, oh, I want to make the Commonwealth Games, which I knew I could. I've done before. I never got picked for injury or whatever. So that was my motivation of like sort of coming back and saying, okay, yeah, I just want to qualify. Because then you got some self-achievement. Obviously, every year I didn't quite make it, so I just kept getting hungry and hungry and keep doing it. And so in the end, I need to do a full year's training to give myself a proper go.
So when did you take that decision then to leave?
At the end of last season, pretty much.
Okay. They've given you a full year and you're back again on the buses when?
Oh boy, I'm back to, yeah, I'm back. I've got to go in tomorrow, actually, talk to the bosses.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and negotiate another year because next year the World Champs is in London. And
Your
my
home city.
bus that I drive goes to the Olympic Stadium. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to negotiate to try and obviously go for London because I'm in good shape. I just need to keep going for next year.
So you're based down in Lewisham, but you took the decision to try and find a new coach and a new way of training. So what did you do?
Yeah, because basically I thought, I'm taking it seriously. I've done it before, like when you're at uni and stuff, you're pretty much a full-time athlete and you stay in England. I was thinking, oh, what do the top world-class endurance runners do? And they base themselves abroad. So I was like, oh, I need to find a group. And luckily enough, someone in my club, Basingstoke, he's good friends with one of a world-class coach. So when they went to Beijing, they asked if I could like tag along in their group. And he accepted, so I went to Ethiopia for 4 months training with the group, and like training was like so much harder because before I trained hard, but that's nothing.
And what about Ethiopia? What was the situation there in terms of altitude?
Altitude is 2,800 feet, no meters. Yeah, so it's 1,000 meters higher than I've ever been. So what I've learned is that was actually too high, but that's where they trained, so that's where I went. And yeah, it's a really poor country. Obviously, food is scarce and stuff, so you're paying loads of money for basic stuff, basic food. Oh boy. So I went there. After 2 days, I got food poisoning and I had to get rushed to the hospital, which was like a half derelict car park. And you see the doctor, and to get medicine, you have to go down out the hospital, across the road, and buy the medicine yourself, go back up to the hospital and give it to the doctor. And every time you see one doctor, he tells you what you need, you go across the road, you get it, come back. Then you go to a different one, and then they tell you need something else, you have to go across. It's mad.
But you survived it. You adapted to it.
I did. I came back, and I was grateful for pavements. That's how you know it was rough.
Where exactly was it?
It's Addis Ababa.
Okay, cool.
We trained on Bekele's track, which is £15 to use every time.
Wow.
So
And that's
basically,
for everybody, it's the same price.
yeah. So when that 40
Wow.
people go on the track, he's making big money. So he's clever. He's cornered the market because he knows runners go there to train and they need to train on the track. So he's made the track really expensive. So to run on the track is more expensive than massage, physio, more than a meal. So to run on the track is
Wow.
more than it costs you to go to a restaurant for dinner.
Wow.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That's a shame.
And then
And what about the rest of the running? Were you out on trails and stuff and
Yeah, they got this massive land, but it's like self-inflicted. They got this massive parkland. Imagine like Hemel Hempstead, and the locals dig it up and start building huts. The field is like 300 acres. It's huge. But every week it gets smaller and smaller. So like I said, last year, they did this 1K loop. And when we went there this year, it was only 400 metres of the loop left.
But it was good for you. You enjoyed the training out there. You enjoyed the approach.
Yeah, obviously I learnt stuff. The way they trained, like doing two long runs a week, doing sessions back to back, things like that, which was good for rounds, you know, like keeping in competition. So like it made me look at training differently. And then they do weights every day, but they just do a small amount every day rather than just doing one big load. Yeah, I think I learned a lot. It does help being in a warm environment because you don't have to worry about getting cold. Pulling muscles is bad because the climate's warmer.
When we spoke about it before, you said the fact that they include a lot of speed work sort of after every run.
Every run, they always do, they call it ABCs. So they do like basic drills and then they do like 4 times 200. But it ain't 200 strides, it's 200 sprints.
Right, wow.
And they do that after every single run, twice a day.
Even the long ones?
Yeah, twice a day.
Wow.
So they're always doing sprints. I think this gets diluted when it comes to Europe. So people do the drills and then they do the strides. Because stride is all right, you're stretching the muscles out. But the sprints, when you actually sprint, I found by doing that, I got my speed back.
And you've always had speed.
Yeah, but I was losing it. But I haven't been, since I've come back from when I had my time off, I haven't been running as fast as I used to until I started doing like this. And all of a sudden, like this season, in training, I've been running like super fast.
And in terms of their long running stuff, is it kind of quite intense stuff? Have you found the intensity different from how we train over here?
The rumours and myths are true. They start off really slow and then crank it up. So I always wear my heart rate. So before I went, I changed my runs. So I was trying to do my normal running at a quicker pace. I was doing all my runs at about 6:15 to 6:30 miling. So I was cranking up my running, and then in the end I got down to like 6 minute miling, and I was getting in shape really quickly. So, but when I went with them, they start off at 11 minute miling, so pooling. Wow. They do that for about 20 minutes, and they crank it up, and they crank it up. But by the end, you're running 5:45 miling, but you're probably only doing that for maybe like 10, 15 minutes. But on my watch, because I had the heart rate thing, at the end, it averaged out to be maybe 8:15 miling.
Okay.
So in total, it's slower than I liked, but I just said because I'm at altitude, that makes up for it.
Yeah.
Because when I tried to do the running I did when England, like, so I went out for a run and ran 6:20 miling, because of the altitude, it was taking more out of me every day.
Yeah.
So doing what they trained, I could do the long runs, run a bit quicker at the end, like doing the sub 6 minute miling, but still maintain the training load.
That sounds good. And you train a couple of times with the legend Gunzebi the Barber.
Oh, the Queen, yes. So I went there and they're like, okay. So they test you out first. You have to train with the girls.
Right.
So I had to go train with the girls, but the barber trains with the boys, so I wasn't even training with her. So I trained with the girls, and after I slayed the girls. I was like, okay, I'm up in the big league, I'm training with the barber. And we was doing a session, what was the session? It was 4 times 10 minutes. So the 10 minutes was about 3K. And they split up into groups. So you've got like Ayale Suleiman, you've got Youssef Bala, all in the A group. So all these are all like world-class athletes. You've got Jelani, who beat Mo in the 10K. And then I'm in the B group. And the coach goes, Jababa in the B group. She goes, no coach, I've got spikes, I'm in the A group, I'm going faster there. So we all did the first one. And the B group, because they set us off like 20 second interval, like space. We was like catching them. So we actually run the first one faster, but our group was going way too fast.
Right, okay.
And then the second rep, Jababa's in my group. I was like, oh! Listening to coach now. So she sneaks into the B group because you know the A group's too hot. But yeah, she's really good. She's a monster on the long stuff, absolute monster. But she doesn't like training with girls, because if she trains with a girl and she's having a bad day and she gets beat, she has a go at the coach.
really.
Because why are you trying to embarrass me? Why are you trying to shame me in front of my people? But she's always trying to beat the boys as well.
Right, okay.
So she gets upset if the boys beat her.
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like, when we was in Ethiopia, she whooped me on the grass reps all the time. We did a 10K race, like a 10K tempo there. And I could only keep up with her for 4K.
Wow.
And then she beat me by over a minute.
Wow. And you're running like 30-minute 10Ks, right?
I ran 29:30 this year.
Right. No, that's amazing.
And so, but we are at altitude, right? Because she's born at altitude, so she's altitude proof, I like to say, because to her it's just normal, but for us, we're at a massive disadvantage.
Yeah.
And then we didn't train together on the track, but I was thinking, oh yeah, I'll have her on the track. The only thing I could beat her on was the hills.
Really?
Yeah. But when we went to Spain, obviously things are even out, but she's still tough, man. And we did like 800s. So I did the first one in 2:1 and she was right on my shoulder. And we did the second one in 2:2 and she's right on my shoulder. And this is a woman running 2:1, 2:2, 3 minutes recovery. There's women that can't even do that flat out, resting all week.
Wow.
And then she was upset because I beat her.
Really?
Yeah, she goes, you can't beat, they call me Mzungu. So in Swahili, that means the white man because I'm half white. So they call me Mzungu. So yeah, she was upset because I was beating her.
Wow. And the other guys, what they like, the kind of those other top athletes, were they quite like, they welcomed you in and...
Yeah, they're really, really friendly. There's no ego, like the English, you know, and European, like people walk around, oh, we can't talk to you because we're better than you. There's none of that. They talk to everyone. They're really friendly, really helpful and stuff.
If you could, would you go back out somewhere else foreign next year?
I probably wouldn't go to Ethiopia because I don't think it worked for me because the altitude was so high. I actually think it had a negative effect because I knew I was in good shape, but I just couldn't train properly when I was there because it's too high.
Okay.
And my body wasn't right when I came back. So
yeah.
I'll probably go away again, yes, but I was trying to convince them to maybe go somewhere else and then I'll definitely go train with them. But when they're in Spain training, I'll definitely go and train with them.
Yeah, nice. But you said about the diet over there was a bit difficult. Is your diet pretty good back here in the UK? Have you...
I'm like most English people diet, no. It's just whatever's on the shelf. Because I was a bus driver, obviously, I was putting a bit, you know, I was getting a bit podgy.
Yeah.
So I was trying to lose weight anyway, but no, the diet there was pretty, it's basic. You've got rice, goat or chicken.
Right.
And that was it, really. The main food, but just cooked in a different way. And you don't eat salad because the water's obviously not clean. So, yeah.
Keep it simple. And you haven't brought any goat back over from there to the UK.
Well, when you were there, so one of the athletes was Haroon. He's a 400-meter runner. He got silver at the indoor in America, in Eugene.
Yeah.
He went and bought a goat. So we're at the hotel, all sitting there having breakfast. He comes rocking in with a goat round of it. Shrinked out to a chair and says to the waiter, I want to eat this for dinner. But he says, make sure he's fed and watered. So the waiters are feeding the goat and giving it water. Right. And then lunchtime, they walk the goat around the back. They chop his head off. He's just got a goat's head on the floor. Then they drag the body away. They skin it. And then they just cook the meat up. And then everyone's eating his goat. And it tastes good. It's crazy.
You can't get that in Lewisham Market, though, can you?
No. It's like when we went to Genzebi's house. So when we're in Ethiopia, their calendar's different. So in England or the rest of the world, it's 2016. But in Ethiopia, it's like 2011. So their calendar's way different. They got a special calendar.
Yeah.
So their Christmas and New Year is the 7th of January, and it's both on the same day.
Okay.
On the 7th of January... Genzebe Dibaba invited all the athletes to a house. So we're having like this little party, Christmas dinner. So we all have the Christmas dinner. Then in the evening, we're all drinking coffee. And the servants pull these two goats in. And they're dragging him in by one leg. And they're going, and my friend is going, oh man, that's so cruel. And about an hour later, we're all hungry. And then some meat comes out and we start eating it. I go, that's the goats we saw. Got pulled in, he goes, yeah, but they taste nice though. So yeah, it's just old school now.
Yeah. Old school. And what about booze and stuff? Because do you drink at all? Like, or
I do drink, but I don't like the taste, so I don't drink. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. But athletes out there wouldn't be. There's no drinking.
All the athletes in our group, because they were Muslim, they don't drink because it's obviously against their religion. But the Ethiopians, they're not Muslim, they're obviously Catholic, they drink. But most of the athletes didn't drink.
Yeah. Because at the top of the game, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm interested about your strength regime as well, like, because when I've trained with you before, like, you've always been pretty good going uphill. And you put that down to your kind of strength work. When we've talked about it before.
Yeah, yeah.
What was their strength like out there? Why? How was it different?
So, like, when they did hills, they did 25, 30 hills. And a hill was, like, a minute and a half long. And it was...
Wow.
It was almost... We was at 3,000 metres when we went to the top. Super, like, super high. But, yeah, they did weights every day, but just a small amount of weights every day. So...
Yeah.
I did, when I was in England, before I went, I did Olympic lifts. I did all of them, like squats, cleans, bench press. You do all that stuff. But I did it all in one day. So the next day, I was tired.
Right.
So when you're there, you do maybe squats one day. The next day, you might do cleans. The next day, you do bench press. But you do loads of other little bits, but not as intense.
Okay.
So you do the same amount in the whole week, but you just sprinkle it over every day.
Okay.
And
all right.
The way that works, because the gym was in the hotel.
Right.
Because in a normal society, you have to travel to the gym, so it takes half an hour to get to the gym, half an hour to get back. You can't do that every day because it's time consuming.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're there, because the gym is there, literally, you go running, come back from your run, you go straight in the gym, you go straight to your room, you shower, and you go straight to dinner. It's all.
Yeah.
There's no time wasted in commuting.
Yeah.
I think that's where most of Europeans miss out, because they're always commuting to places, you know, so it's all wasted time.
Yeah.
If we could go to the gym every day, we would, I guess. If, like, a tip would be for the athletes, if they could try to, you know, like, cut down their commuting time, their training stuff, they get more time for recovery. So, they train really early in the morning. So we wake up 6:30 every morning. And then not only because they ain't got streetlights, so you can't train really late at night, but also if you train really early, you've got more time to recover for when you train at 5 o'clock.
Right, okay.
Most people, unless you go to work, you train before you go to work. Most people at uni or full-time athletes, they train at like 9 or 10. By the time they get back, it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
If they went really early, by the time they get back, it's still breakfast, and you can rest, and then you wake up, it's lunchtime. You've still got another 5 hours before you train. Plus, it's more time to recover.
But I suppose out there, there's not as much stuff to do. So you're able to get to sleep at, like, 9.
It's so good, because virtually there's no Wi-Fi. Yeah, they had one TV, Dubai one, that was English, and that was it. So you had to amuse yourself, pretty much.
Yeah. And then before we kind of get there, there was one we were talking before about, I always thought you were a man to, one of the early men to beat Farah in the UK, but you've only faced him a couple of times on the track, haven't you?
So, going back to the English schools, when I did the English schools the first time, it was in Bury St Edmunds. I won the 1500 steeplechase, and that same year, Mo won the 1500 flat. So the year after, we went up an age group. So he was under 20. So under 20 is 2000 steeplechase. And at the time, Mo's coach was Conrad Milton. And they were convinced the steeplechase was an easier route to get a medal at the World Juniors.
Okay,
So they decided they're going to do steeplechase.
Yeah.
So we turn up to Watford and I was like, he ain't beating me because I'm champion. And then he was like, he ain't beating me because he's champion. So we both set off at world record pace. For the first two laps. Side by side, not budging. We were miles ahead of everyone. Miles. Yeah. We must have been over 100 metres ahead. We were going so fast, fearless. Then reality kicked in, and we both dramatically slowed down and just got slower and slower. And then on the last lap, we're coming into the last lap, going to last 200, going over last water jump. He's 5 meters ahead of it, it's me. Then the chasing pack are literally like 10 meters behind me. Mo toes the water jump. And then as he's towed it, he shin scrapes all the way down it and he lands in head first. And he comes up like a drowned rat. He's just like, but he got up straight away and just carried on running. And my eyes did lit up for a little second thinking I can beat him. He's just drowned. But he didn't. He got up and carried on running and he won. He won in the end.
He
was injured 3 months after that, so he didn't do the World Juniors in the end anyway because he was injured.
Okay.
So he said, that's the first and last time I ever do steeplechase.
And the last three questions are like quick fire ones, right? So they're just the first thing you think of, you've got to say. So what is, in your opinion, the greatest make or model of running shoe you've ever worn?
My favourite shoe that I wear is the Nike Vomero. So
okay.
I wear that the most to running. So I guess for running purposes, that's got to be my favourite.
Yeah. And can you recommend like a film or TV show or something, or a book or magazine or whatever, something you spend time, or even computer game, anything you want to recommend?
Running related or not running related?
Anything.
I like anime. So I like Naruto.
Okay.
Yeah, Ninja Warrior. Bring out your inner warrior.
You're not involved with this Pokemon rubbish, are you?
Oh, Pokemon is big boy. Do they have Pokemon in Amsterdam?
I don't know. They must be. I haven't really looked.
I'm level 18, bad boy.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't got a Pikachu yet.
What do you have to do? Just like you just wander around and it comes up on your phone. That's your reality.
Like Google Maps.
Yeah.
It's exactly like Google Maps. They use real locations. So when you go to the post office might be a pokey shop on your game.
Okay.
So you
All right.
walk to your post office. When you get there, you press a little button and it gives you free items.
Okay.
And they're called pokey shops and they've got them everywhere. So in England, they've been using schools, churches, famous plaques where famous people achieve stuff, like inventors. So they've used all sort of landmarks. So it is technically a bit good because you get a bit of history if you pay attention to where you're actually going, like the Pokestop.
Yeah.
And then the other add-on is certain places are gyms. So, for instance, a sweet shop could be a gym, a Pokemon gym, and you go to the gym.
Okay.
And there'll be other people, they're hench Pokemon in there, and you've got to go and battle them and stuff. it's gaming for outdoors.
Yeah,
and it's
which I suppose is a good thing.
It's really, really clever because you've got people that you know have never seen the sun coming outside like with sunglasses on because they're getting burned. You know, factory. Well, it's really funny. Like the most popular place I know in central London is Regent's Park. So you know someone's playing Pokemon because when you play the game, it kills your battery on the phone because you have your screen on all the time and you've got your GPS on, so it drains your battery.
Yeah.
So everyone that's running a power bank from their pocket into their phone and holding their phone out like they're looking for directions is playing Pokemon. And some of the people you see wearing it, like people in suits, and I'm like, people going around in groups of 15, and these are adults, like 45-year-olds. And you're like, what? That's not super playing this.
I get annoyed with them scooters, the adult scooters people have. So I'd be too annoyed to have watched people playing Pokemon.
If you just got the phone and you see them going, and if you see anyone doing this, like flicking their finger up, it means they're trying to catch a Pokemon.
And the final question is, in your opinion, what's been the greatest ever endurance running performance of all time?
I would say Komen in 3000 flat.
Okay, yeah.
720. But for the one I've seen, because I didn't see that live, but the one I've seen in real life is Radisha 2012 800 world record.
Yeah, that was pretty special. Is he going to win it again, do you reckon?
I don't think so.
No.
I think 800 is the only event that's wide open this year.
Do you reckon?
1500. No one can beat Kit Rock. Kit Rock can only lose it himself. And then you've got Mo in the 5 and 10. Same thing. Only he can lose it himself. Steeplechase. No one's going to beat. Is it Kip Roto?
Oh, really? I think Kenboy's going to beat him.
No, Kenboy didn't get picked.
You're joking.
This year he only won like 8:33.
Oh, no, he's there. He's definitely there. I remember Let's Run saying, like,
can't be there.
He's there. I bet on him. I've got a bet on him, and he's going to win.
Okay. Because Kip Roto's been trying to break 8 minutes all season. And he's been running 8:05s. He's in a different league. So if he goes flat out, no one's going to win. But the 800 is what... There's no favourite for the 800. Yeah. Even Amos doesn't look good. Before he went.
Yeah. I like the women's events this year. They're pretty amazing. Like
that's because there's no Russians.
Pardon?
Good women are fine because there's no Russians. But... Yeah, like women's 8, women's 15. DeBarba is favourite for the 15, definitely.
Yeah. Well, she did the she's not going to do the 8 and all the 5, is she? She's just going to go 15.
From my understanding, I think she's only going to do the 15, but she might be entered as a 15 and 5.
Okay.
But
all right.
I know from when I was training with her, what she does, she gets really nervous and really scared when she goes to championship. So she'd do a round, but then she won't do any running in between.
Oh, really?
Because she's worried about, you know, like, wasting her energy. Which
makes
sense. So the longer the championships go on and the more competition she gets, the worse she gets because she's just full of lactate and she isn't jogging out the lactate.
Ah, okay.
So she'll do the 15, and then if she does the 5 after, she's going to be in bad shape for the 5 because she's just going to be so stiff.
Because she lost that 5 last time, didn't she? Well, I was thinking she was nowhere near as good as she was
in
the early
game. That's exactly why, because... She didn't do any running in between. She just did the races, and she was just really stiff.
Oh, nice one. I won't bet on her then for the 5.
Not for the 5, but the 15, I can't see anyone beating. She's so fast, man. I'm telling you, like, she was beating... I know I'm good, but I'm not amazing, but I'm good. But she was beating good men. Like, international men. Not world class, but international. Like, when we was doing the 800s. How many women can do that, like, 800 session?
You said how many women can do one of those?
Yeah, only a couple.
Yeah.
There's obviously Semenya in the women's 800. She's in a different league. But the 15, DeBarba, no one can outsprint her.
Oh, that's going to be great. I can't wait. Nice one, Jermaine. I'll let you get on. We'll enjoy.
All right, cool.